Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into AOA, Agriculture of America. Great to have you join us here today for the program. We have a lot of ground to cover on the show. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Today's AOA brought to you by Cenex. Cenex can help you determine the right high-quality premium lubricants to keep equipment protected for the long haul. Trust your local experts at Cenex or visit Cenex.com for more information. Coming up here on the show today, we are going to have a conversation in segment three with Emily Score from Growth Energy. We have a host of various ethanol-related, biofuel-related issues that we want to talk with her about. So looking forward to that conversation coming up here in segment three today. Also, towards the end of the show, Farm Futures has released their new grower survey. And it sounds like there could be a few more soybean acres versus corn. We're going to get some updates on the potential acre mix ahead of USDA's planting numbers on Thursday. Jacqueline Holland with Farm Futures will join us for a conversation in segment four. Also in segment two, we're going to get some thoughts as we near spring planting season. Some good reminders that folks need to think about and keep in mind. We are going to do that with Angie Reekins, field agronomist with Iowa State University Extension. She's going to join us here in segment two of today's program here on AOA. Couple news notes out as well on this week. On Monday, it was announced that HPAI, high path avian influenza, has been found in dairy cattle in Kansas and Texas. That statement coming out from USDA, they say there is no risk to human health with HPAI switching from birds over to dairy cattle. And I know we're working with folks in the dairy industry and hoping we're going to get some comments on that here at some point this week, maybe with Michael Dykes from the IDFA. So that's a story headline. Just wanted to get that out there that we are tracking that story, just breaking in the news here this week. All right, let's take a look at what's happening in the markets. Of course, that's a big news headline as we race towards the USDA reports coming up on Thursday. Joining us now for market analysis, Mike Miner with Professional Ag Marketing is joining us. And Mike, great to have you with us here on the show. And man, you are right kind of in that that snow rain line, I think, there in southwest Minnesota, aren't you, Mike?
Definitely. It's been a change of weather here as of late, for sure. We were experiencing really, really nice temps this winter, pretty much the whole way through, like the rest of the Midwest, really. And then, we had snow north of us, east of us, kind of south of us. And then we just got dusted here yesterday, but a little icy here in this part of the world again, which I guess we're having that made up for us here after missing it for a while.
Yeah, well, I have to think it's going to help out with some of that soil moisture maybe as we get ready for spring planting season. So we'll deal with it for now, and hopefully it'll set us up for a good plant here in just a few weeks' time. Mike, as we look at these markets, on this grain side, pretty quiet Tuesday. We saw soybeans do some rallying on Monday. Largely, though, it feels like these markets are just kind of waiting and marking time until Thursday's big USDA reports. Your thoughts on the grain side of this trade here so far this week?
Yeah, let's start on the soybeans. You know, we really haven't been able to have any of that follow through strength after Monday. And I do think you're looking at some of the soy products trading a little bit lower. So with bean oil getting a bit of pressure from profit taking in the palm oil market, I think we are seeing some of that trickle over into some of these other commodities. And I think it's money flow in general as well. I've noticed a trend here lately where you're starting to see the proteins and the grains and some of these other commodities all kind of trade together and a little bit opposite direction of the U.S. dollar there, Jesse. So I do see some bigger things at play here, but regardless, anyways, just a little bit of profit taking after we've had some short covering here as well in the soybean complex and these grains. I guess that's kind of what I'm looking at this point on the soybean complex.
How about in the corn market here, Mike? I know in terms of May futures, just kind of been stuck here, haven't been able to get above this overhead technical resistance after a pretty decent rally off contract lows. What's your thoughts on the corn market right now?
The corn market, I got to be honest, it's been really tough to find a headline that matters in the corn market as of real late. It seems like the soybean market and the wheat market actually have found quite a bit of news lately, but the corn market here has been in quite a lull when it comes to news activity. And I think part of it here is that we're just going to have some slow trade until the USDA releases their stocks report and what their prospective plannings report is here this week on Thursday. And really, that's not odd for this time of the year either. I mean, typically, I really like to see option volume and volatility at a very high peak through, you know, June, July, summer time frame. And then pretty much my low on volatility here and time value would be in this March contract expiration time, kind of until that prospective plannings report. So from a seasonal perspective, I mean, for us to go sideways here a bit on this corn market shouldn't be out of the norm by any means here, Jesse. But I do look at corn demand. It's pretty stout at this point. Shipments have been up 34% from a year ago. Mexico really leading the way there. You know, a little different than the soybean number, which has taken a big kickback from last year. But really on corn at this point, we're really waiting for the come and waiting for to see what we're going to get out of some weather in Brazil coming forward. And obviously, I think this line of after the prospective plannings report, I think that's when you really shift towards talking about U.S. weather and rainfall events like we just had, Jesse, that are going to start to matter a lot.
Mike, here over the livestock trade too, I should ask you about that real quick. Cattle seeing some more pullback here after a pretty high placements number on Friday's on feed report. Hogs though trying to find a little bit of strength, so it's kind of a tale of two different markets, it feels like, over in the protein sector, Mike.
It is a tale of two different markets. However, I do want to talk about the one thing they've really had in common up until this point, which is outstanding demand. You know, the cutout market really never had a dip lower seasonally on the beef side, and it really the hog side as well. For us to hold cutout above $90 virtually the entire winter on hogs was a complete win. And we've put together some incredibly friendly fundamentals on the hog side of things that have really led to a fantastic margin opportunity through the next 12 months that we've been offered now. And with corn and meal taking a step back as well on this recent downturn, it's provided really good hedging opportunities for crushers in the hog market. And I think that's nothing to scoff at. I know it's a little early seasonally for the hogs here to really take advantage of some of the summer margins. But, you know, when I look out further, we have something that we definitely need to talk about after really some tough times in the hog markets as well. And liquidation seems to have overcorrected a little bit. The market's taken a step back here with some lower prices, but really strong cash, strong cutout. We've indicated that pork prices remain supported, and a big part of that is it's tied to what cattle's done here.
Definitely. I know folks can reach you guys, professionalagmarketing.com. Mike Miner, Professional Ag Marketing. Thanks for joining us on AOA today, Mike. We'll get you back on the show again soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. We'll talk with Angie Reekins from Iowa State University Extension here on AOA. Join us the first Wednesday of every month on AOA for the latest episode of the Monthly Grind with our friends at the National Corn Growers Association. We'll discuss the latest topics surrounding the corn industry, the relationships between corn and other parts of the agricultural supply chain, the newest initiatives and partnerships from NCGA's Market Development Action Team, and much more. That's the first Wednesday of every month for the Monthly Grind on AOA. It's a show you don't want to miss. Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, where we take a close look at the benefits of cooperative ownership. Every week, we'll host a new guest and discuss how you can get the most from working with your local cooperative. And we'll learn why farmers and ranchers just like you choose cooperatives to help them persevere and prosper. Tune in each Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by our friends at Cenex, their premium diesels and premium lubricants. You can find your nearest Cenex location and trust your local experts there. Or if you don't know where it's at, go to Cenex.com and find it, and they'll be able to help you out with all of the needs you have for your equipment on your operation. Well, let's get some thoughts as we get ready for spring planting season across much of the Midwest and Plain states. And here to help us with some reminders, joining us now, agronomist with Iowa State University Extension, Angie Reekins, is with us here on the show today. Angie, thanks so much for joining us and hope you're doing well.
Thanks, Jesse. I've been thinking since we talked last week about this interview is I really should just come south and play golf with you for a couple of days, right?
You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea. It has been pretty nice in portions of the Mid-South and getting into the Southern Plains. And I know that you come down this way, there's been some folks who've been doing some planting. But in your neck of the woods there in central Iowa, we've even seen some snow here in recent days. And so it's been kind of a wild, wacky end of March when it comes to weather for your neck of the woods, hasn't it, Angie?
It has. In fact, the last couple of days, every single color on the radar has been on the map, right? Yep. We had thunderstorms this morning. We've had, at my house, we had just over five inches of snow Friday. It's been raining, sleeting, and snowing off and on, mostly rain today, ever since Friday. It's, you know, that's why they call it March Madness. Madness has nothing to do with basketball, right? It has everything to do with weather, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I think you are right. Shout out to the Iowa State Cyclones, though. I know are moving on, so hats off to the Cyclones. Okay, well, let's think about with all of this precipitation that's been moving through in parts of Iowa, Angie. I know there's many parts of the state that need the moisture, many parts of the upper Midwest that need this moisture we've seen. So I have to think that whether it's been snow, rain, whatever the case may be, it's going to help out here to give us some decent subsoil moisture heading into spring planting.
Yeah, there's really no one complaining about what's been happening the last couple of days with this moisture we've been getting. When I look at the drought monitor, there is a great big chunk of that northeast Iowa area, north central Iowa, down in to a big swath down towards Iowa City that is still in, as of last Thursday, D3 or extreme drought. And nearly all of Iowa is in some level of drought, except for a few counties right along the Mississippi River in east central and southeast Iowa. And so this is, however you want to look at it, is we're either going into our third or fourth year of drought, fourth year for some places. And so this moisture is very much welcomed. I've had a lot of people I've seen over my winter meetings tell me, as they've been doing projects this winter outside, just how dry that subsoil is, right? And we rely on that subsoil and topsoil moisture for crop production in Iowa to get us through the summer months. And there just hasn't been a lot of moisture there. So this is all welcomed moisture. I think we'd prefer rain rather than snow at the end of March, but we're going to take what we can get. And I think people are really excited about that.
Well, and to your point, not too many people complaining about this moisture because it is much needed. And I look at the calendar, Angie, and I know some folks have been itching to get out there and do spring planting with the nice weather. But you look at a calendar as we are rolling into April, we still have plenty of time. You know, I've heard some talk growing degree days in the southern portions of the country have been well ahead. But I know for the upper Midwest, you guys still kind of behind on that. So, I mean, thinking about this, we still have plenty of time to get our crop in the ground, don't we?
Oh, gosh, yes. We shouldn't even be panicking yet. I just pulled the maps, Jesse, and when I look at our growing degree days, right, I mean, we don't worry about growing degree days until we have a crop in the ground necessarily, but they do impact insect development as well. And we're running anywhere across north central Iowa from, I'd say, the upper 80s at Mason City, like 87 growing degree days, to somewhere around 103 at Hampton, above average. That's not that significant. And like I said, it has a bigger impact on pest development this time of year than it would on, obviously, on stuff that's not even planted in the ground yet. So we don't need to worry about planting conditions yet. It's still a little early. And with that being said, you know, there's two major things we always look at. We look at soil temperatures. We want soil temperatures at 50 degrees and warming. So a trend going up, not bouncing around. That really messes up our seed germination and development. And we want adequate soil moisture, right? We don't want it too wet. We don't want it too dry. This rain, this precip we've had, is going to do a lot to get us some moisture in those upper few inches. Obviously, it's going to take a while to fill up our soil profile. Not that we necessarily want it full, but to actually replenish that soil profile. So even if we don't get a lot of rain over the course of the next week, like we got moisture predicted for next weekend as well, it's going to take a long time to fill up that soil profile. So we will continue to need timely rains going through this growing season. I think our climatologist told us the other day that to get to where we need to be, like where we normally are for soil moisture, we would need 22 inches of precip this spring, and nobody wants 22 inches of precip this spring, right? So there's a big deficit to overcome, and we obviously don't want that all at one time. We want to slowly make some gains on that as we go through this year.
Well, Angie, what are some other tips you would share with folks as they're gearing up for spring planting, things to remember, and this might be things they've heard every year, or maybe new things they need to think about for 24. I mean, planting depth, you know, seed depth, things like that. I guess, I don't know. What are some tips you would want to share with folks?
Well, the first couple of things I really want to think about is, I mean, most seed is purchased and selected, right? So I think most people have made their decisions there. We've had some companies tell us, be careful with your planting situations. They don't feel like they have a lot to offer for replant seed. So I might just throw that out there as a caution. And that certainly isn't every company, but a few companies have some concerns about replant seed. availability, especially in, I'm sure, certain maturities. That's kind of happens every spring when we think about that. I really want to think, obviously, about what my soil conditions are. And then now's a great time. Everybody's in the shop today. It's raining, working on those planters. So we really want to think about a couple of things. Number one, I wrote a blog about 2 weeks ago that said, do we need to conserve soil moisture, right, with tillage or lack of tillage, not doing tillage this spring? Depending on what this forecast does and how much rain we get, there are definitely areas where we may still want to consider about that moisture conservation. So we do that by doing either no tillage or a much shallower tillage, so we're not drying things out too much. There's opportunities there. I would definitely keep an eye on our cover crops this year. This moisture is fantastic, and all the cover crop fields are green and growing, and it looks lush out there in places. But if we turn off dry again, we may need to think about a little bit earlier termination than normal, just so we're not pulling so much moisture, so we conserve that moisture for our corn and soybean crops. I don't know that that's as big a concern right now, considering we're getting moisture, but something to think about. And then always, you know, time on the planter, right? Iowa State Extension has a lot of great information on your planter pre-flight checklist, things to think about, calibrating that planter, checking depth settings, all those things that you can do, closing wheel alignment before you actually get to the field. So if you're interested, people can always call their extension field agronomist and we can get you to the links. We have some nice videos and some nice resources just for you to play around with, even before you hit the field, right? Things you can actually do in the shop to check all those things.
Yeah, no, great thoughts. And again, as Angie said, reach out to your local extension agronomist across Iowa or in your state, as I know all of our states have a lot of great experts on hand. Angie, final thoughts from you real quick before we run out of time. Anything else on your mind as we gear up for spring planting?
One thing I think on my mind, not so much in regards to planting, but what we might see after crop starts to emerge, is because we've been so dry, I'm a little bit worried about our chances for herbicide carryover this year. We spent a lot of time this winter talking about that in some of our winter meetings, just to kind of prep people for what they might be seeing. Hopefully a little bit of moisture, we're moving some of that herbicide out of that seed zone, or at least it takes moisture for microbial action to break down. We saw a lot of herbicide carry over the last two springs. Would not be surprised to see that this year. So just mentally prep yourself for what you might be seeing when that crop starts emerging. We can't blame everything on the seed or the planting or the planter or the planting person, right? There's just some wonky things, and sometimes they all kind of come together to make a mess in the spring. So knowing what's going on out there is really helpful for troubleshooting for future years.
Well, with that, Iowa State University Extension agronomist Angie Reekins. Angie, thanks for joining us here on the program today. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right, we'll be back with more on AOA, brought to you by Cenex, on the way right after this.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with this check at markets for the American Ag Network. Entry into and out of the Port of Baltimore is blocked this morning after a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing a catastrophic collapse of the bridge. The Port of Baltimore is one of the major ports on the East Coast, specializing in the movement of rolling cargoes such as cars, light trucks, earth-moving equipment, and large farm machinery. It also ranks second in the country for the export of coal, sixth for importing coffee, and it is also a major receiving hub for sugar and gypsum. It's yet unknown when the port will be able to reopen to freight traffic, while some 40 ships remain trapped inside the port, including small cargo ships, tugboats, and pleasure craft. At least 30 other ships are said to be on their way to the port currently. The Port of Baltimore is the largest port by volume for farm and construction machinery and 3 million metric tons of agricultural products in 2023. The latter included 1.2 million tons of sugar and salt, along with gypsum, fertilizer, and forest products. This port will reopen, we just don't know how long that will take, creating disruptions in the meantime. Corn futures mildly lower early on, pressured by beneficial moisture from the form of snow and rain making its way from Nebraska north and east, with rain hitting the Gulf states early Tuesday. Slow trade is likely until the USDA releases its stocks and seeding report in 2 days. Expectations are that we could see a March 1 stocks number of 8.44 billion bushels. That would be more than 1 billion bushels higher than last year. Soybeans are so far unable to follow through on strength from Monday, with soybeans now down in just a dime above the 50-day moving average. Soybean products are also a bit lower to start, with bean oil getting a bit of pressure from profit-taking in the palm oil market. That's markets for the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section. When Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL, opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting at homes across the country, and tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. When the temperature goes down, so can your equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel Fuel is built with a balanced additive package to keep equipment moving. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com for more information. Also, I got that news early on Tuesday of that container ship hitting the Francis Key Bridge in Baltimore and causing a catastrophic collapse. Our thoughts are with everyone involved in that terrible situation out there. And so we're going to continue to watch that as that is ongoing here at this time. All right, let's turn our attention to biofuels, as well as some recent news, recent panel that Growth Energy CEO Emily Score was on. We're going to talk about that more with her right now here on AOA. Emily, it's great to have you back on the show again. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So get us up to speed here. I just want to start. We have a lot of ground to cover. You were on a panel here recently for CERA Week. Give us the details of what exactly this is and what you heard on that panel. Let's start there.
Well, and here's why this is exciting. So the conference, it's CERA Week, and it's traditionally a huge event for the energy sector. It's held in Houston. It's known kind of as the Davos of energy. So you've got American leaders of the energy industry there. But traditionally, biofuels has not had a strong presence. And so what was exciting was to be there, to be on a panel, to be able to make the business case for American biofuels and American bioethanol. And it was really fantastic, the amount of interest in our industry right now within broader liquid fuels conversation on how do we decarbonize transportation fuel. So it was great to be up on stage talking about the innovations taking place in ethanol and how we are not just a fuel to decarbonize, but we are potentially a feedstock as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned just all the kind of the brain trust that is at this type of meeting, and thinking about that decarbonization and how ethanol can play a role. I mean, that's something, of course, you know, you and other folks in the ethanol industry have really been talking about for such a long time, but now bringing other folks in the broader energy sector kind of into the fold a little bit is exciting, Emily.
It is. And, you know, a lot of conversation on just on the business side. And so people are looking at what's happening in renewable diesel, and there's this partnership forming between oil and the feedstock suppliers. And so a lot of questions on what are the business models that will help scale biofuel supply. So I talked about the opportunities really with higher blends, that if you look at all the fuels out there, biodiesel, renewable diesel, SAF, E15 remains so economical and just such an easy way for us to decarbonize. If we go from a 10% blend to an E15, you know, we're going to make great strides in terms of our quest to decarbonize. But then also talking about what are some of the exciting opportunities if we can get sustainable aviation fuel off the ground, and importantly, what are the policies that we need? So you had leaders of business at this event, but you also had leaders of government. And so it was good to have both there to interface and talk about where we're going and what we need to be able to really succeed.
Well, a few other issues that I think would tie in with some of the conversations you had there. Just in recent days, of course, we've seen the EPA's tailpipe emissions rule. And I know that this rule, not one viewed, it wasn't friendly, I guess I would say, to the ethanol industry. Can you share your perspective and Growth Energy's thoughts on that rule?
Sure. Yeah, it's disappointing. It's not what we wanted to see, because really what the administration has done is they've failed to seize on this opportunity to really leverage biofuels to decarbonize the legacy vehicles on the road today. And so you continue to see to the tailpipe emission standards that this administration, they're putting their thumb on the scale of one technology, as opposed to saying, if our goal is to lower GHG emissions, what are all of the ways that we can do that? And how can we use more biofuels in the gas tank to achieve that goal? So disappointing. I think it's going to be no surprise to anyone that this will likely end up in the courts. I think there are a lot of people who have a lot of strong views and think that there are some drawbacks and oversights in terms of what they've finalized. And so, so I think it's really a missed opportunity more than anything, because as you're looking at the trend lines too, I mean, I think, again, some of how they're anticipating in terms of the speed with which we're going to see electrification, I think a lot of the data are coming out that's probably not going to come into being. And so we really need more biofuels as opposed to fewer biofuels right now.
Well, and thinking about this push for EVs by the Biden administration, Emily, I mean, this isn't just an ethanol, you know, industry issue, but even, you know, on the fossil fuel side, a lot of folks, you know, when we're thinking oil refiners and more, they also don't view this tailpipe rule as friendly either. So, like to your point, multiple people not really thrilled with what this final rule has ended up being.
I think you're absolutely right. And you saw that in kind of the commentary and the statements in the immediate aftermath. It's a combination of kind of the projections and are unrealistic based on what's actually taking place in the marketplace, and really ignoring, and it's almost baffling in terms of the degree to which the tailpipe emission standards are ignoring that you can have higher octane, lower carbon, renewable American fuel in the gas tank, and you will immediately decarbonize. We don't need to overhaul the infrastructure system to be able to do that. So that's something, you know, we will continue to remind the administration about. And I think, you know, there will be many entities who are going to likely take this up in the courts because of the reasons that we've discussed.
We are talking today with Growth Energy CEO Emily Score. Emily, another issue I know just here on Tuesday, Growth Energy, Renewable Fuels Association, the National Corn Growers, American Farm Bureau, National Farmers Union, and others, sorghum producers, you guys have sent a letter to the EPA calling on Administrator Regan to get an emergency waiver done for E15 sales this summer. We know we have the news, of course, talking about getting E15, you know, for next year with the 8 Midwest governors court action, but still, we need a solution for this summer, 2024. What's the latest on getting an E15 emergency waiver?
You're right. So we sent a letter, and now is the time to be having that conversation, because we would expect to see an emergency waiver coming out, you know, probably end of April. And this administration issued an emergency waiver in 2022, also in 2023. I think if you look at globally what's going on in our fuel supply system and chain, there's still a lot of volatility and still very much merit to be able to have that. And this is also about making sure that consumers can continue to save on higher blends. The savings, the cost savings associated with E15 or unleaded 88, they're well established year over year, summer over summer. And we're optimistic. We were very encouraged by Secretary Vilsack's recent comments during a congressional hearing on stage at Commodity Classic, his optimism that this is something that the administration will very much consider. But we want to make sure that this absolutely happens, because we can't have a summer where consumers can't access this kind of cost-saving fuel.
Well, and I know, too, there's various legislation out there still working through Congress to try and get year-round E15 nationwide, but that's still something that is working its way through Capitol Hill right now, right, Emily?
You're right. You're absolutely right. We're making progress, and so we've got legislation working its way through, but it will not come to fruition before June 1st, and that's when the summer driving season officially begins. And so we want to make sure that consumers will continue to have access to E15 as they have for the past five summers, that we can continue that, and you can continue to have kind of an uninterrupted access. So that's very much the conversation. That's one of the conversations that we're having with the administrator and the White House right now.
Emily, I have to ask you real quick as well, the GREET model when it comes to sustainable aviation fuel, we were expecting that updated model March 1, did not get it, still waiting. Have you heard anything, any movement on getting a finalized GREET model for SAF tax credits?
So I don't have any update relative to what we heard from the government March 1st when they said that they were going to miss their self-appointed deadline. We continue to have a lot of conversations with all of the key players as an industry, multiple agencies. And so my sense is, and this is kind of consistent with what we heard at the outset, it's going to be a matter of weeks, not months. So we should see something soon. And as much as we're disappointed that they didn't come out on March 1st, it's more important that they get this right. And so if the government needs a few more weeks, you wouldn't think that they would need it, but if they need a few more weeks to be able to make sure that when they come out with guidance, they're giving our industry credit for all of the innovation that's taking place so that we can fully take advantage of the tax credit opportunity, so we can fully encourage greater investment and innovation throughout the ethanol supply chain, then that's worth waiting a couple more weeks. So hopefully we'll see something in the next week or two.
All right. We'll keep our eyes open. Emily, there sure is no shortage of stories to follow in the ethanol and biofuel industry, is there?
Always keeping me busy.
Yeah, always keeping you busy. And of course, we appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to join us. Emily Score, CEO for Growth Energy. Emily, thanks again for the time here on AOA today. And have a great week. We will talk to you again real soon.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Emily Score there with Growth Energy joining us here on Agriculture of America. And good to get an update. And I'm with Emily. I think sometime here in the next few weeks, we're going to get an update on that GREET model. And hopefully it is something that is beneficial to agriculture and hopefully gets it done the way it needs to be done, gets it done right. That's what I know a lot of folks in ag are hoping for. All right, here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to get some updates on the latest survey for planting intentions out from Farm Futures. Jacqueline Holland with Farm Futures and Farm Progress will join us next on AOA.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really?
You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Around the Table, where we explore the benefits of cooperative ownership. Today, Joe Lardy, a research analyst from CHS, will provide a spring weather and planting outlook. Joe, the USDA Prospective Plantings Report will be released on March 28th. Do you expect any big shifts from expectations, and how will weather play into acreage decisions?
We always have to be prepared for a surprise. And I think going into this report, we can't be too comfortable, even if everybody kind of agrees on a particular number. I think weather is going to play a major role this year. Conditions are conducive to some very early planting. So it'll be interesting to see how aggressive producers get with that early planting opportunity this year.
Well, how might markets affect corn acreage this year?
Well, currently coming out of the USDA Ag Outlook Forum, they had predicted 91 million acres for corn. But I think we're going to see a higher number than that going into the March report here. I'm looking for something in the 92, probably 92 and a half million acres. I think that we had enough fall application of fertilizer.
Well, turning to soybeans, what's driving planting decisions?
Number one is the weather. We've already seen reports of people planting soybeans already in March and certainly before the insurance dates. Another thing that we take a look at is the ratio between soybeans and corn. Currently, that ratio is 2.53. So soybeans are 2.53 times the price of corn. That's a historically very high number. The market is sending a signal to producers to potentially plant some more soybeans because given the ratio between the two of them, they're saying it pays a little bit better to plant soybeans.
Thank you for joining us Around the Table. Learn more about the benefits of cooperative ownership at cooperativeownership.com. Any information or opinions presented are for informational purposes only and do not constitute trading, legal, or other professional advice. CHS makes no warranties about any information or opinions provided and shall not be liable for the use thereof or any errors or omissions therein.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home? And you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Well, American farmers might plant less corn than last year, but it will still likely be larger than what USDA previously anticipated, according to new data out from the March 2024 Farm Futures Growers Survey. Welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex and Cenex Premium Diesel. Hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions aren't new. Cenex Premium Diesel meets the demands of today's toughest engines. Learn more at Cenex.com. Joining us now to go over that March survey, she is with Farm Futures and Farm Progress, grain market analyst Jacqueline Holland is with us. Jackie, thanks for joining us again on AOA. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks, Jesse. Thank you for having me.
Well, get us up to speed. You know, we've been talking a lot about the USDA prospective plantings numbers coming up on Thursday, but Farm Futures, you guys just wrapped up your March 2024 acreage estimates, and sounds like that we may plant a little less corn than last year, but still, we might see a higher number than what some folks originally expected, right?
Right. So our farmers indicated that they expect to plant 92.4 million acres of corn. That'll be about 2% lower than what we planted last year, but it's still a little bit higher than what USDA forecasted at the February Ag Outlook Forum of 91 million acres. So that didn't change a whole lot from our survey, the previous surveys that we've done. It came down a little bit from our January survey. But once again, we are still seeing all the same trends of these marginal one-to-one acreage shifts from corn into soybeans this year. So our farmers indicated that they're going to plant 86.0 million acres of soybeans next year. That is nearly 3% higher than what was planted last year. And once again, there's about a 2.3 to 2.4 million acre swap that we're seeing directly in between corn and soybean acres. So from when we surveyed last January, we're seeing that volume tick up a little bit, but it's still that same pattern of a one-to-one acreage shift.
Well, Jackie, that seems to run pretty concurrent with some of the rumblings I've heard, some of that street talk, that coffee shop talk, so to speak, here about what planting acreage could look like. Because if we think about the fall, I mean, it was so nice for fall field work, and it felt like there was a lot of anhydrous was put on in the fall to prepare for corn planting this spring, right?
Right. And it wasn't just the weather either. Farmers were looking at much higher cash and futures prices for corn. Input prices had come down significantly from the prior year. And remember, farmers recorded the highest net farm income on record in 2022, and prices were still pretty good last year. So farmers were sitting on a lot of cash last year. Prospects for corn were looking good. And I'm hearing reports that anhydrous ammonia applications were about 15% higher than what fertilizer producers had anticipated last fall. So farmers aren't going to just apply anhydrous ammonia and leave it to, you know, the whims of the market. Mm-hmm. I think farmers were locked in pretty certainly on corn already last fall.
Yeah, that again would seem to make sense to the things I'm hearing as well, Jackie. What about other acreage? I mean, we look at winter wheat, spring wheat, sorghum, cotton acreage in the south, rice acreage as well. I mean, what were some of those estimates looking like here in the March survey?
So for winter wheat acres, our farmers indicated that they had planted 38.4 million acres of winter wheat. That's nearly a 5% increase from last year's acreage. And again, still higher than USDA's figure that was put out in February and the winter wheat sowings number in January also. But that reflects just improved soil moisture conditions in the Western Plains, you know, farmers really bouncing back from abandoned winter wheat, hard red winter wheat acreage this time last year, and getting back into the fields and being able to restore that pipeline. So, however, we're seeing a significant decrease in spring wheat and durum wheat as surveyed by our farmers. Our estimates for other spring wheat of 10.5 million acres, if that's realized, it's going to be the smallest winter spring wheat acreage planted since 1972. And for durum wheat, our farmers indicated planting 1.1 million acres this spring. That'd be the smallest durum wheat acreage planted since 1958. So I think, you know, it's a little bit more tricky to survey spring and durum wheat producers because they're a smaller group in the larger wheat landscape. But I think that overall downward trend will definitely prove itself to play out in Thursday's report.
Okay. All right. Real quick as well, we got about a minute. Sorghum, cotton, rice looked like flat cotton acreage and maybe a little less sorghum and a little more rice in your March estimates, right, Jackie?
Right. That's exactly correct. And I think with rice, that's reflecting super tight global rice stocks around the world. With sorghum acres, again, we saw that rainfall really replenish soil moisture levels on the Western Plains. That's going to help move a lot of that production back into wheat and corn, if that works more favorably for farmers.
Well, I know folks can look at the full March acreage estimates from Farm Futures online, farmfutures.com. With that, Jacqueline Holland, grain market analyst with Farm Futures and Farm Progress. Jackie, thanks for the time here on AOA today. Appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you for having me, Jesse.
All right, we're out of time here on the show today, brought to you by Cenex at Cenex Premium Greases. Coming up on our next AOA, we'll talk with South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening to AOA.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
When news happens in agriculture, or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms, and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us. We work around it and we live around it every day. And we just become desensitized to what's around us.
We go through safety training and, you know, we try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen, but you just never know.
There are so many farmers that I think take for granted all of the underground utilities that are there.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit certain things, you're liable for it.
I mean, we kind of know what's out here, but all at the same time, you just always call.
FarmSafe 811 starts with you. Whether you're installing drain tile or doing any sort of digging, always call 811 and wait for any underground lines to be marked and have the depth confirmed. That's farming with care. But if a line does get damaged, go somewhere safe and call 911.
Always keep safety in the back of your mind. Just stay humble.
For more information, go to farmsafe811.org.